Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
This is D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. I feel very lucky and privileged to have this particular guest on Church and Culture today. From England, we have Robin Walker, very prominent composer there, who writes extraordinary music on extraordinary themes, and I think themes that will directly connect to all of you listeners. He was born in York in 1953. He went to schools attached to the historic York Minster, went to Durham University and Royal College of Music. He taught for a while, for example, at the University of Manchester, before leaving the academy and moving to the Pennine Hills, I don't think I pronounced that correctly, of the West Riding of Yorkshire on the edge of Saddleworth Moors, where he has lived on a farm, or next to a farm, for the last 30 years. Robin Walker, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you, Dylan. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, tell us a little bit why you left the academy, and how has it been living on these moors for the last 30 years?
Well, I thought I might have been an academic, but to be a musician and an academic, for me, just never mixed. I got to the stage in my early 30s when I thought that the whole academic rigmarole and the institutionalizing of music was the kiss of death to creativity. That's not the case with everybody. But if you put feeling first in art, and I don't see how it can be otherwise that you should do that, feeling comes first, then the intellect. That's the natural order of things. And if that isn't being catered for, then you've really got to consider your position. And I did this. I found certainly the composition and performance of music in an academic context was just too cut and dried. And music ain't cut and dried, is it? It's whatever the opposite of that is. It's moist and growing. And that, of course, leads to the metaphor of nature. I had to get out of the big city and commune with my surroundings and learn from them how you make something organic and how you make it grow. And that was the initial impetus to do that.
Well, I want to remind our listeners I'm talking to the British composer Robin Walker, who has established himself a few years younger than I am, but he's established himself as one of the most important composers presently active in the classical world. And his range is extraordinary. You know, Robin, you do chamber work, you do choral music, you do orchestral writing, and I read somewhere that you're considering a three-act opera on Odysseus. Is that true?
That's right, yes. In fact, I decided to make three operas out of it rather than three acts. It would have been longer than Goethe Dämmerung if I'd done it in three acts. And we can't have that. And so I eventually did the first opera, which was the first act. Full-length opera, without a break, lasting an hour and a half. And I would finish that just about 5 years ago.
And what is that opera called? What is that opera called?
It is called Odysseus on Ogygia.
And oh, we're going to hear an orchestral part of that opera today.
That is right, yes. It's an episode from the Odyssey of Homer.
And how far along are you on the other two operas?
I've started orchestrating the second one. In fact, that's what I was doing this morning. From a composition sketch. So it's all written. In fact, I wrote it 15 years ago, and I've just not touched it. I've had other things to do. The orchestrating is a taxing mechanical task. You can pick up the self that you were 15 years ago and apply that skill to what you were then.
Well, we're going to start with a choral piece you wrote and was performed by the Talus scholars. I have thee by the hand, O man. And tell us a little bit about this piece. It's very beautiful. It's very powerful. We're going to listen to the first 3 minutes of it. Tell us a little bit. You call it a yearning, or a man's yearning for the blessing of God.
That's right. When I wrote it, I wasn't at all sure how I would have characterized God, but I knew that I wished to continue as a praying man and to address whoever I was addressing, whether it's God or my own unconscious, as though I was speaking to myself. And whoever it was, I was seeking the will of God and to appeal to him for, it says in the text, for wisdom and charity.
Well, let's start listening, Robin. Here we have I Have Thee by the Hand, O Man, sung by the Talus Scholars. We've been listening to an excerpt from Robin Walker's I Have Thee by the Hand, O Man, sung by the Talus Scholars. And Robin, speaking of Talus, that piece reminds me of Thomas Talus.
Yes, well, it's very much modeled in its structure and its length and its counterpoint upon the great 40-part Motettitans, written, I think, in 1567. Yes, I certainly learned all I needed to learn from that Talus piece. And, of course, it is very much an English sound written for a great cathedral. and my own ideal of sound as a former cathedral chorister in a medieval cathedral, well, it was something I could naturally follow and took in with my mother's milk, as it were.
I almost felt like I heard a heartbeat pulsing through that excerpt.
Well, I think that if you don't engage physically with the music that you are writing, you cannot expect to reach others. Going back to what I said a few minutes ago, if you don't put feeling first and your own nature and physicality, then you cannot hope to give pleasure and get to the will of those who are listening to you. They need something sensual in order to approach the will. And I don't myself draw any distinction these days between the physical and the spiritual. And I think that art invites us to experience both of those simultaneously.
Well, we do believe in the incarnation and the fact that the soul and the body are united, firmly united. That may not be exactly what you mean, but we certainly understand that instinct to look, you know, to see things unified and united rather than divorced from each other. Robin, I may be wrong, but I think the next piece we have, the dance, is from the Bells of Blue Island. That's also from an opera, is it not?
That's right. It's a chamber opera, and there were only three musicians playing it. And it's musically, yes, it is an opera. Musically, it is about overcoming. Much of what I do is about overcoming and finding the form that can convey that. The piece is an instrumental interlude from this chamber opera, in which two male characters, one young and one old, are painfully searching for meaning in their lives. And their sense of pain and loss in the opera finds a response in these dances, instrumental interludes, which speak of a spiritual joy that the characters don't yet know of.
Well, that makes me want to listen. We're going to listen now to these dances from the opera The Bells of Blue Island by Robin Walker. A spiritual joy is an act of dancing in the rain.
Thank you.
delightful. I had my feet were dancing underneath my chair. That's Robin Walker's dances from his opera, The Bells of Blue Island. Obviously, it was a recorder played by John Turner and the Camerata Ensemble. The recording itself is called Jigs, Airs, and Reels. Did you find it particularly challenging to write a piece that featured the recorder?
Well, in England, it's the first instrument that you learn. So at primary school, we were all issued with plastic recorders, descant recorders, once a week, and maybe the odd percussion instrument. And the notes were put on the blackboard, and you learned how to play it. And it is a basic but primitive in the best sense of the word instrument. It just has the six holes from which you get your scale. And it is, in a sense, limited. Dynamically, you're stuck with one particular dynamic, really. Therefore, you have to work melodically and rhythmically,
yes,
to create a best.
Well, that's a wonderful piece, and it does feel like an expression of joy and dance. And, of course, I want to call attention for our listeners to the difference in genres as we pass through. We had this multi-layered motet, I Have Thee by the Hand, O Man, and this chamber ensemble playing what is a dance, essentially, with a recorder. And was that a viol and a violin with playing along?
Violin and cello.
Violin and cello, beautiful. You know, we were going to play more pieces of your music, Robin, but I made an editorial decision that some of them were just too beautiful to trim, and that is certainly the case with the next piece we're going to listen to, entitled She Took Me Down to Caton Bay, which you describe as personal romance and collective folk energy lyrically combined. You want to tell our listeners a little bit more about the origin of this piece?
Certainly, yes. Now, in the island of Great Britain, you'd think it quite a small island because you're never more than 70 miles away from the sea, and I'm quite a lot closer than that. You can get to the sea anywhere within an hour. And Caton Bay is a seaside bay. I've always known it since childhood in the great county of Yorkshire. And the sea is the North Sea, looking out to Scandinavia and the Netherlands. And just as you say, it's a notion of personal romance connected to a collective folk energy and producing something lyrical. It strikes me, if you're going to make any personal subjective statement of any significance, it has to be linked to what is already understood. Who's interested in your subjective statement other than you? And that thing that's already understood should be embracing of a folk material or myth, as I do in opera, or it must evoke some time-honored pattern. And the collective energy that's expressed in folk music, I think, does evoke that pattern. It's time-honored, it's pure, and on the whole, it's modal, and as such, it's outside time. Time is suspended in modality. So I think that the folk combines well with the contemporary, and in this case, contemporary romance, to fix something.
Robin, I think you said something very profound there when you said a subjective statement if you're going to make it as an artist, needs to be linked to something the audience already knows, because otherwise there'll be, I assume you mean, there'll be no connection, there'll be no emotional connection.
Exactly, yes. In other words, you have to be contemporary, but a part of tradition, and thoroughly understand the wisdom in tradition, and its structures, its forms, its archetypal patterns. I mean, an archetypal pattern is just a pattern of instinct, and we've had the same human instinct, as I understand it, from the anthropologists, for at least about 8,000 years. So we really must listen to the past, understand its patterns, and present those patterns mm-hmm. alongside, in collusion with, our own private passion. Otherwise, you're going to lose a dimension, and you're not serving the listener if you do that.
Well, let's listen to this. She took me down to Caton Bay, personal romance, and collective folk music by Robin Walker. We just heard Robin Walker's She Took Me Down to Caton Bay, a personal romance combined with folk music. And I think all of our listeners will agree that this should not have been played in any cut or trend fashion. Such a gorgeous piece of music. We're talking to British composer Robin Walker. We're going to take a short break and play some more music and continue to talk with him.
Light of the East, weekend on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, the Byzantine liturgical calendar commemorated a 17th century martyr for unity, Bishop Josaphat. During the same feast day, we laid to rest a great modern-day figure for unity, Father Robert Taft.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck.
Sometimes now I just think when I hear people who are baptized and they face a hardship or something or a disappointment in life, they say, forget it, I'm done with God. I'm done with God. I prayed and I didn't want this thing to happen and it happened, so forget him. And people walk away. Or there's sickness or there's disease and there's trial. Friends, we live in a fallen world. This is not the place where we're going to find our ultimate comfort and happiness. Jesus did not promise us comfort and security and safety and fun and a jacuzzi, a limo ride in Disney World. He didn't promise us this kind of comfort. He said, I will give you a kingdom and everything that belongs to me, but you must first become my disciple. You must repent of your sin, change your heart, change the thing you love more than God, throw your idols on the ground, and put God first in your life. Enter his church and then follow him on the narrow way. And he said, be assured, if you want to follow me, it's going to cost you everything. And this is where the hostility of the world will come against you. Because the world hates me, Jesus said. It hates him. He's the one threat that the devil can't handle in this world.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45. On 990 Ave Maria Radio.
I'm back with British composer Robin Walker. We're going to listen to some more of his music. Toccata Records, not too long ago, produced an entire CD of his orchestral music. Perhaps the best known and most celebrated piece on that disc is called The Stone King. We're going to listen to an excerpt of that, which Robin describes as the individual shattering his own self and remaking it. This is, Robin, as you know, this particular piece has been described as, by one critic, as one of the outstanding achievements in British music of the 1990s, in fact, of any time. That was David Fanning. Tell us why did you name it the Stone King?
Yes, well, I suppose, the king is noble or should have nobility, and stone is durable. And therefore, durable nobility or noble durability, I think, is something we should all seek and attempt to achieve. But this is not done without an understanding of tragedy. In fact, the piece portrays tragedy. I think life is potentially tragic for all of us, and hence the appeal of organized religion as a means of overcoming tragedy, incidentally. And so I think to get out of feelings of tragedy, not being confirmed as tragic, means we must develop and get out of our old self and remake ourselves.
Let's listen to an excerpt. Now, this is a 30-minute piece. We're only going to listen to an excerpt of a little over 3 minutes, but I think it gives a very good, taste of the greatness of this piece. The Stone King by Robert Walker. Is a 3-minute excerpt from Robin Walker's The Stone King. And I tell you, Robin, that piece is that's truly inspired. Even from hearing that small part of it, reminds me of Sibelius. It reminds me of this. It has a kind of compelling force that reminds me, for example, of Sibelius's last symphony, his seventh.
Right. Well, it's Northern European. If you're above 50 degrees latitude north, then you're Northern European. I'm 54 degrees.
Well,
we have a mindset.
Well, this needs to be performed everywhere. This piece, I'm telling you, needs to be performed everywhere. I look forward to hearing it live, sitting next to you at some point in time.
Me too.
So we've moved from choral to dance to romance, violin, string music, to large orchestral, late romantic modern piece. Now we're coming back to a chamber piece that you entitle "I Thirst," and you talk about it overcoming spiritual desiccation. And I want to quote another critic here, Robin Carpenter, who says, in an age when so much new music is hardly more than soulless note spinning, striving for effect, Robin Walker stands apart, a classicist at heart, writes from the heart in a wholly contemporary idiom at once distinctive and attractive. In short, he is that rare being, a composer whose music leaves you wanting to hear more. And I say amen to that. Why did you call this next piece "I Thirst"?
Well, it's of course the fifth word of the seven last words from the cross.
Yes.
I thirst, the great cry of dereliction. And I'm not a Christian, or no longer a Christian, but what Christianity, of course, tells us is the wisdom and the greatness of sacrifice, of loving sacrifice. And that is universal.
Well, at some point, Robin, and we're going to do some more interviews together, we're going to have to follow this thread, because, you know, I had lunch yesterday with our mutual friend Bob Riley, who's really responsible for bringing us together, and we talked about your not belonging to the Christian faith anymore, yet almost all your work is clearly deeply spiritual works, and you even describe them as such, but we're not going to do that now. We're going to listen to what one critic has called a piece with clouds of natural harmonics, "I Thirst," played by John Turner and the Camerata Ensemble.
Thank you.
just stunning. That was a piece entitled, I Thirst, one of the seven last words that Jesus spoke on the cross, composed by Robin Walker. Of course, whenever you give something a title, Robin, your mind naturally goes to what it refers to, if it has a concrete reference. In that case, my mind went to that moment on the cross, and what I heard clearly suffering. I heard a kind of, not just suffering, but an acceptance of it, and a inevitability of it as I listened to it. Because I kept hearing repeated phrases and repeated phrases being intensified step by step.
Yes, and I'm sure we would all agree that suffering is inevitable and pride should be taken in it if we are using it as a fuel to a higher thought and a greater integration of ourselves. And I Thirst, though I acknowledge its Christian meaning, is a general cry for the overcoming of a spiritual desiccation. That's what I had in mind.
Well, in our next piece, we're going to be talking about overcoming a woman, and that is Odysseus on, and is it pronounced Ogygia?
I believe the Greek is Ogygia.
Ogygia, this is where Calypso kept Odysseus for 7 years and wouldn't let him go. And you talk here about inimical forces overcome by a spiritual power. That's what it took to get Odysseus away from Calypso, correct?
Yes, she was the goddess, she was the nymph, and who offered him agelessness and immortality. But he knew better than to accept that. It interests me that I wrote this libretto in the challenging period of midlife, age 35, 42, when your first part of life comes to an end and you're preparing mm-hmm. for the second part. And there can be a lot of sloth or disquiet in those years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
And but at the same time, you can't talk about that with just as it is. You have to mythologize your own life if you wish to make a personal response to it artistic. You had better cloak it, disguise it, in well-known mm-hmm. myth, and to give it some validity which is time-honored.
Well, let's listen to how you cloaked yours in this excerpt from the opera you wrote, Odysseus, on Ogygia. Let's listen.
Thank you.
We've been listening to an orchestral excerpt from Robin Walker's opera, Odysseus on Odysseia. Again, leave it to the Greek scholars to pronounce that correctly. And I had to cut it a little short because I want to make sure that we have all the time we need to play the following piece, because this is absolutely stunning. It's from a about-to-be-released album entitled Music for My Love, Volume 2. It's a toccata piece that Martin Anderson commissioned, the second recording of pieces dedicated to... Well, you tell the story quickly, Robin. Who is this dedicated to and why?
Yes, it's dedicated to Martin Anderson's late fiancée, Ethiopian lady Yodit Tekle, and they had a child together. She contracted stomach cancer and died really very quickly from it, and Martin initiated commissions in memory of her.
Let's listen to as much of it as we can. It's just a stunner. She Moved Through the Fair by Robin Walker.
Thank you.
We can't quite finish. She Moves to the Fair, composed by Robin Walker. It's another example of what he talked about earlier, of the melding of the of a subjective experience with musical material that's already known in the folk tradition. Robin, I want to thank you for being a guest on Church and Culture. And fortunately, we have scheduled some more interviews so that we can play more of this incredible music.
It's been very good to talk with you, Dale. I'm much obliged to you.
Well, and we'll be doing some more in the near future with Robin Walker. All of you who are listening, please stay with us. We'll be back with another guest after this message.